Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Third chapter. The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will fulfill the promise I made to the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And in those days and at that time, I will cause a righteous branch to spring up for David, and he shall execute justice and righteousness in the land. And in those days, Judah will be saved, and Jerusalem will live in safety. And this is the name by which it will be called: the Lord is our righteousness.
Have found some hope in that. A Charlie Brown Christmas debuted 50 years ago on December 9th, and nearly half of our country watched Charles Schulz's low-key commentary on Christmas or Christian materialism. We gathered together around this to try to make sense of what is the real meaning of Christmas. And tomorrow night on ABC, there's going to be a special golden anniversary telecast that's an hour-long special. It's a 50th Christmas Charlie Brown is what they're calling this. It's going to be hosted by Kristen Bell, and we're going to hear a number of pieces, including this one right here, featuring some of the original music. The movement of that, though, is contrasted with the beginning of that very cartoon. So it opens with Charlie Brown talking with Linus. They're against this brick wall, just like this. And Charlie says, "I think there must be something really wrong with me, Linus. Christmas is coming, but I am not happy. I don't feel the way I was supposed to feel. I just don't understand Christmas, I guess. I like getting presents and sending Christmas cards and decorating trees and all that, but I'm still not happy. I always end up feeling depressed." And Linus responds, as only Linus can, "Charlie Brown, you're the only person I know who can take a wonderful season like Christmas and turn it into a problem. Maybe Lucy's right. Of all the Charlie Browns in the world, you are the Charlie Browniest." And thus begins that iconic 30-minute cartoon that invites playful and also sometimes searing reflection on the meaning of Christmas as Charlie Brown decides to direct the school play. I learned this week that there were two major creative decisions that happened as this was being pulled together in a really short period of time that created, I think, both the uniqueness of the approach that has made this an iconic image for 50 years, but also that helped ensure that it would be as unique as it is in this moment. And these are two struggles that happen. And we're going to talk about one of them on Christmas Eve, so you'll want to come back for that. But the second one that we're going to talk about this morning was a decision that was made about laughter. See, every single, virtually every single show that was on television at that time used a laugh track. And Charles Schulz detested this. And so he said bluntly that this will not have a laugh track. And the producer, Lee Mendelson, pleaded with him and totally disagreed and said, if we don't have this, this cartoon is just going to plod along. No one is going to even make it through 3 minutes, much less 30 minutes. But in typical Charles Schulz fashion, he said, it's this way or I quit. And he didn't quit. He stayed with it and they produced it. He didn't budge. No laugh track. Just pure Vince Guaraldi jazz and animated characters of Peanuts struggling to get ready and to make sense of what it even means to get ready for Christmas. So you might say that the Christian season of Advent, our time of getting ready for Christmas, mirrors that very decision, that no laugh track decision of Charles Schulz. There's one Bible scholar who says it this way. The season of Advent is puzzling to many Christians. The stories that we read during this time are, by and large, not childhood favorites. There's no star in the east guiding devout magi. There's no soliloquy of angels stirring shepherds to go and to see the babe. There's no harried innkeeper that we're going to read about in this time of getting ready for the mystery of Christmas. There's no touching moment when Mary ponders all of the things in her heart. Those stories aren't read during the season of Advent. The stories of Advent, he writes, are dug from the harsh soil of human struggle and their littered landscape of our dashed dreams. They're told from the vista where sin still reigns supreme and hope has gone on vacation. Many prefer the major notes of joy and gladness that we find during the Christmas season in the Christmas stories over the minor keys of Advent. So of all the seasons in the Christian church year, the 4 weeks of Advent, it seems to me, might just be the Charlie Browniest weeks that we have as we gather. And this runs counter to what so many people are experiencing in our rush toward Christmas and the culture around us. And so we come this morning to the prophet Jeremiah and wonder together about how he might guide us as we move toward the coming of Christmas. See, he's writing to a people that are devastated by loss. These are folks who are living the realities of every minor key you can ever hear. And he writes just to them one note of hope. The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will fulfill the promise I made to the house of Israel and the house of Judah. See, everything might seem lost to all of you in this space, but God is still faithful. The house of David will be cut down, but God will still be able to bring forth life from the midst of death. A righteous branch will spring up. That's the image he uses. Our reading on this first Sunday of Advent is addressed to a people who are in exile. God's promise is meant to comfort and to heal and to make whole a people who are in the midst of despair. Their homes have been taken. They've been kicked out of the land that they knew. And here they meet a God who promises to protect and restore them, even as they are in the midst of great suffering on the brink of despair themselves. See, it's precisely in that context that God speaks God's promise of hope. And it's in this that the doors open from despair to creativity and hope. Jeremiah's language is, a righteous branch will spring up. And it can so easily feel like a naive hope. So I want to stress that Jeremiah was writing anything but naively to these folks. He was writing himself from prison, Every word that he was sharing was one about the devastation and an announcement of doom. This was not making the prophet popular. That's not what prophets ever have been. It's probably not what they ever will be. They speak truth into a moment of despair about a coming of hope that is just around the corner. An advent, a coming of hope. A righteous branch will spring up. See, maybe so, the people of God in those days might have heard. Maybe so, but it sure doesn't seem like that's the case right now. It sure doesn't seem like that's the case as we look back at the dust that we've left behind us and leaving our own homes. See, as we've set up tents in this foreign land, it's hard to feel like that root is coming up right at this moment. It seems like a long way off towards spring. But Jeremiah promises that in God, a righteous branch will spring up. It's a word actually of tenacious hope that's spoken to counteract a life-sapping and despair-inducing reality that the people find themselves in. And I think that's its power. Back then and today and into every tomorrow. See, together with the prophet Jeremiah, we're called not only to name the suffering and the injustice that is the real in our world, but to lean in to God's promised alternative future. And that's what we do during this season of Advent. As we look together at the realities of the world around us and our own lives and the way in which we find ourselves at moments on the brink of despair, and we find in God and through one another this leaning in to a promised alternative future. See, we don't get to bring about God's future through our own strong will or our own brilliance or smartness or hard work. The truth is, Christmas is coming. There's nothing that we can do about it. Christmas is coming, but we can keep vigil as that gracious light moves right through us. We might miss it at moments, but Advent gives us the possibility of slowing down to see that gracious light that is moving in God's world. It calls us then to open up our hearts and to become partners with God in the advent of a new reality. And that's what we're going to be about during these 4 weeks as we move toward the mystery of Christmas. We're going to do our best to trust that the Christmas is coming again this year as we discern what it looks like and feels like to partner with God in the advent of a new reality by rooting our lives in hope, in love, in joy, and in peace. There's a pastor in Ohio whose name is Mike Slaughter, and I was able with a couple of other young pastors when we were very first starting the table to go out to Ohio and to spend time with Mike. Mike is a prophet, I would say, which means he's not often popular in his day, but he looks around at what is and says it. And then does so by leaning into God's hope for a new reality. And so as we've moved these last 5 years to the table, there have been many moments in our journey as pastors where I've felt on the brink of despair. Like, I remember actually sitting outside, and Linda would make me go upstairs to just stay away from your beautiful faces, because I would get so nervous as we were starting, whether anybody was actually going to bike here or walk here or get out of a car to come into this space. I'd be so on the brink of despair that I needed that word of hope, and I needed to get away from what was actually here in this space to have a chance of seeing that gracious light that was going right past, that hope, that new reality that was being born within. So I would often turn to Mike and to his church's story. See, in the 70s, he was gathering in this rural area outside of Dayton, and there were a couple dozen people that were in the sanctuary, and it was a church that hadn't really made an impact on really the neighbor next door, much less Dayton down the street or the Darfur. But Mike and the people around him started to open up to that gracious light that was coming past and the advent of God's new reality that was being born. And they trusted in that, and they have found a way as a church to bring hope to places of despair. And so I want to invite us to watch a video that has helped me this week to look around at the reality of the world and then to feel just a little bit of hope in the midst of what can seem overwhelming despair. So let's watch.
This is my son. He is 3 years old, and he is 100% pure human being. I love this kid more than anything. Our family, we live here, largely uninterrupted by the world's problems, except for when we go to church. Church for us is the place where the world shrinks, our hearts, they swell, walls of latitude and longitude evaporate. Church is where statistics become stories. This is a boy from Syria. He's also 3 years old, and just like my son, 100% pure, the purest of pure human beings. Their family lives here, in opposition to my experience, directly interrupted and uprooted by the world's problems. And you know, that's a lot more common than you might think. Right now, one in every 122 people on Earth are on the run. Some from natural disaster, but more and more are seeking refuge from violence and persecution, political upheaval, and social implications beyond their control. 57 million people and counting have been forced to flee their homes and seek safety across borders. Welcome to church. The country of Lebanon holds the record for most refugees per capita in the world. A third of its population are displaced people. 500,000 Palestinians and over 1 million Syrians are seeking refuge in Lebanon.
أصل هذه الجمعية اتحاد الجمعيات الإغاثية نحن نعمل بهذا الإطار من أود أن أقدم الكفاية لهالناس
لا نحن كنا عايشين بالقصير بالأساس يعني مدينة القصير حمص صار القصف كتير كبير من النظام ميليشيا حزب الله كان هجوم وحشي كتير يعني على الأهالي والمدنيين والأطفال يعني صار في تقريبا في 1800 إعاقة كان بس ناس مقطع أطرافها هاي موجودة يعني ناس ميتة في 5000 يعني تقريبا العدد
كنت قاعد بالبيت وإجا صار واسلة عنا عطية جيت طلعت وقفت على الشباك جيت صوبة إجت شلتني من هون هيك وقعدت بالله.
It seems that the crisis is extended. It's not going to end soon. So we cannot keep refugees living in the situation they are living now. The access to water, to latrines, and to proper shelter is still, after 5 years, is still inappropriate.
بس لما صار الحرب صرنا نفكر إنه أنا هلا بنموت بعد شوي من الصاوة وبعد شوي من النعود وبعد شوي من هيك شغلات.
The only reason people risk taking the boat to Europe is because they have nothing else to lose. Group therapy and other methods of psychosocial care is a great way the church can restore hope to those on the ledge. Though many Christians remain in hiding.
بيتنا كتبوا علينا حرف نون بالصبغة الأحمر يعني نصراني وأخذوا بيتنا سيارتنا نزلونا من السيارة روحوا مشي وإحنا بسيارات مكشوفة يعني وما بنعرف كيف نخدل أنا وأولادي يعني بس أخليهم أختل يعني أزد نفسي فوقهم على مدلات يجي للضربات يعني هلأ في يعني في أزيد مثلا أنا هلأ أولادي محطمين جوزي نفس الحالة يعني تعبانة بشكل لأن ما في عندنا مصدر معيشة يعني يدوب
وحتى يخلصونا من الوضع فماكو يعني ما عندنا أي مستقبل ما عندنا أي أمن
بس أطلب وأصلي أقول يا رب انطيني الصبر.
We cannot anymore say that this is a Muslim world and this is a Christian world. This is a civilized world and this is a down or maybe a retreated world. No, the world is one.
This camp is in the southern suburbs of Beirut. It was built for displaced Palestinians in 1948, but the camp was never meant to be permanent. Several die from electrocution each year. 2 weeks after filming, suicide bombers attacked a neighborhood nearby, leaving 43 dead and the community fearful of escalating violence.
Even if I raise my voice a little bit, I see a lot of fear. Some of them, they cannot look into your eyes directly. I want all foreigners to understand that this is not a political issue. Normal people like me and like my children, like my family, we are the ones who are suffering. So I hope they can see the human side of this war. The common hope they have is to go back to Syria and rebuild their country. And I heard a lot about them, about this, that I want to be engineer to rebuild my house and my cousin's house and my friend's house. It's like that. They have passion, and I think this generation can change the future there.
أماني الله يشفيني والله يرجعني على بلدي وعلى أرجع ضيعتي يعني وأرجع أمشي مثل أول ويعني أعمل مستقبلي مثل أول.
قبل كل شيء سوريا يعني قبل أي محل تاني سوريا يعني أنا عندي بيت أنا كنت موظف بالبنك بدمشق مصرف تسليف الشعب عرفت شو؟
Christ was the first one who walked in front of us and we follow him. Jesus came to share our humanity and whatever we do it is like something like maybe small but in the eyes of God and in the eyes of Jesus it's really big.
Loving God, may that generation of young three-year-olds find ways to lead all of us into your hope. May we respond from a place of love and trust in your reign of hope and love and joy and peace that is coming yet feels so far off. May you hold us as we hold these stories and these people and their lives from afar. May we realize the ways in which our own stories and lives are deeply woven together. And in that place, may we find our hope in you and in loving one another. Amen. See, the word that was spoken to a people who were despairing back then may not be different from the word that we need to hear today, that a righteous branch will rise up among us. See, it's a word of hope that is spoken to a people who are living in the midst of tents, who are trying to find a way of making a home together. It's three-year-olds who don't get to play with the Legos that my daughter gets to, but actually then get to sing together. Some of them can't find the beat, like me. But UMCOR, because of folks like you guys, is there on the ground helping three-year-olds figure out where that beat is. And it's those three-year-olds that are going to figure out how to teach us how to move and live into God's being, because in the ways that we wait, God is doing something new. God is promising a new reality. And we together have an opportunity to partner with God in creating that advent of hope. See, Pastor Linda and I have been sitting over there in the fireside room a lot this week looking at these images and trying to figure out, so what does it mean to follow a God who comes into the world to an unwed teen mom in the middle of nowhere? And then before that God is even a toddler, is that God is like learning to walk like some of the kids outside this morning that were taking off to godly play? As God is learning to walk, God's family is becoming refugees. That is our story. Like, God's family is literally expelled from where they are and sent off to Egypt to put up some tents themselves. So it's not a coincidence that when we look around and see the world the way it is today, that we're called to try to figure out how we partner with God in creating some new realities. God came into the world as that vulnerable child. Emmanuel is the word we say. God with us. And then showed us how to care for and to love the most vulnerable. and it doesn't always make sense with our politics, and it almost always uproots our privilege, but God doesn't seem to care. Or maybe God cares so much that whatever our politics, whatever our privilege, God longs for us to find a way to live in that hope and to partner with God in the advent of a new reality. And so I don't pretend to know exactly what that's supposed to look like or exactly how we're supposed to get there. But Linda and I have been holding really prayerfully this week, what might our next steps be? And so we have some images that we want to invite you to hold that I hope will give you a little bit of hope like it gives me, and that together in these, we might find some ways to partner with God and one another in this advent of a new reality. And one of those is that we reached out this week to a group that's called Open Doors. Open Doors is here in Sacramento. They've been around since before I was born, and they have been trying to help refugee families to settle and to create home here in Sacramento. So most refugees, out of 122 people, one is a refugee in our world. Most refugees are going to stay in refugee camps until there is a semblance of peace in their homeland, and then they're going to return there. That's the case when you think about like Eritrean or Somali refugees right now. They're going back to East Africa from Kenya to remake home. But some of those refugees are going to be placed, they're going to be resettled in a new home. Here could be one of those. And so we've called Opening Doors and said, what would it look like for our little church to try to sponsor a family? And we're trying to start that conversation to wonder what would it look like. And I don't know, like there are a lot of reasons to despair about it, right? Like the voice to exclude refugees is really, really loud. And it might not feel like we can find hope in that. The bureaucratic hoops are enormous. So it might feel like we're just going to get lost in it. But we've started that conversation to say, how might a righteous branch spring up in this very place? How might it look for some of the folks in this room to meet a family at the airport and then help them find their way to an apartment that we could help them with? And then to gather together around a table and to break bread and to hear their story and to share our story. And I don't know if we're ever going to be able to make it happen, but we're trying to start that conversation to say, we want to follow a God who came in this way, and doesn't seem like there's any other way than saying we'd like to be involved and to partner with you all in doing this. See, I believe that we will find our hope by partnering with God in the advent of a new reality that might just look something like that in the year ahead. But we also know that despair doesn't just put up tents in Lebanon, right? Despair can be found right here in our own midst. It can be found right here around us as thousands of unhoused adults try to find a warm place to sleep here in Sacramento every single night. Every single night. As temperatures move below freezing, a few folks from our community were gathering. There they are. They're gathering to help us get ready to make this into a house for folks who are unhoused. And so we're going to turn this into a theater, as we've done for the last number of years. And if you're here and you've been here in the past, 120 unhoused adults are going to find this to be their home from December 27th to January 3rd. And you might just feel led to try to partner with God in the advent of a new reality by signing up today to serve in one of those shifts, to reach in love, by helping with food or just cleaning stuff up or just sitting down next to somebody and asking them about how their day was. And if you do, I'm not saying that it's going to be easy or perfect. I think one of the things that will inevitably happen that brings me again back to that brink of despair is that the folks who are going to come in the door are going to be some of the same folks that we saw last year and the year before and the year before. And it doesn't always feel great when you're thinking, wow, we're really wanting to reach in love and this isn't changing. And so it can feel just that way. And you might be tempted, like I am at times, to get caught up in that. And may we hear those words of a branch rising up, hope being born amidst us and around us as we partner with God in the midst of a place that doesn't seem to be willing to figure out political ways to help folks find homes in this space. And if 120 unhoused adults doesn't like pull your heart in that way, to me, Tubman House, you just can't hear about it and not be pretty overwhelmed. There's Lourdes, who helps our kids in the nursery, and David, her beautiful son. Lourdes is a graduate of Tubman House. They provide 18 months of residential housing for teen moms so that they can transition from just surviving to thriving here in Sacramento. And they've been gifted an opportunity to partner with a school in South Sacramento that's closed down, and then to extend their programs from offering those houses, those two homes, to those eight families. Now they're going to, over the next several months, over the next year, they're going to start to work together with the school district to turn this old school into a place of learning, of arts for activism, and education for liberation. And they're going to gather at that school, and they're going to take in every single night 60 unhoused teenagers, folks that are on the streets here in Sacramento that are just a little bit older than David is now. And so I don't know how we as a community are going to respond this year at our Christmas offering. Last year, people were phenomenally generous. But what Linda and I have said is we're going to gift as a church $3,000, and our finance team, we check this. The finance team said we're going to give $3,000 to Tubman House, and then we're going to ask them to try to have that matched. Because for some reason, it feels way better if I'm going to give $5 knowing that that's going to become $10. And so our $3,000 is going to go to them now as they try to raise $10,000. So we're going to start them off with a third of that money as they begin to move to work together on this new way, this advent of a new reality that they're partnering with God in, and we're going to partner with them in. And I'm going to ask you this morning to do something that I've never done before. And I don't think you probably have, but we've talked about this, and we're going to try it. We've already started our shopping Christmas list, right? We've already got some things that we're going to, Sarah and I are imagining for Eleanor that she's going to get to open up on Christmas morning. We've already started, Sarah's going with Eleanor today to do these awesome, like, handmade mugs that we're going to gift to the grandparents. So we're going to try to keep track of all of the money that we spend on our own family and the people that we love in our lives. And what we're going to say is we're going to match that this year by giving that same amount away. And so one of the opportunities would be to give that here for a Christmas offering that's going to go to Winter Sanctuary and Tubman House. You may have some other dream in mind. I'm not here to prescribe what it looks like for you, but I hope that you'll think about what could it look like this year to say, if I'm going to, as a family or an individual, I'm going to give to people I love this amount. What if we gave that same amount to folks that we don't know, but God is calling us to reach and love to? And I fully confess I've never done this. But Sarah and I have talked about it, and she believes we can do it. And she's way more detailed like that than I am. So I'm trusting that. And I'm hoping that you're going to think about what it might look like for you to hope enough in the world and in God to actually try to structure your life and your finances in a way that shares some of that with others. What would it look like if we as a church community started to do that? I actually think it could change both us and the community around us. So into despair. Amen. That's the organizer. That's the organizer right there. And that's the truth of it, is because that's what partnering, organizing looks like. It's I can have this impact in the world. And it's like the person was saying at the end of that video, it can feel like one small step that we're taking. And Greg was brave and he started that clap, and then somebody else came in. And that's exactly what it'll look like and feel like if we start to make those steps and the ripple of God's love being born, God's hope, the advent of a new reality, that feeling that just happened, that's what Christmas is. See, Charlie Brown was looking a long time ago for what is the meaning of Christmas? What is the meaning of Christmas? He went searching. Finds it at the end of that, and may we find it in this moment as we move toward the mystery and the hope of love being born at Christmas this year. Amen.
You heard the cry of our hearts, and you came down. Freely you gave us your love, showing us how. Make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is darkness, let me shine light. And may your love cause us to open up, cause us to open up our hearts. May your light cause us to shine.